Welcome to this week's podcast of Kicking It with Kidneys with your host, Cindy Barclay. Hey, Cindy, take it away.
Welcome back to Kicking It with Kidneys, a forum to discuss important topics for historically suppressed voices within communities of color. Today, we have a really good show for you. I don't know if you remember Melissa Swerb, but she was on season 2, episode 5. She's back today to tell us about her transplant. Now, our KIWK team is back in the house. We have BJ Simone and we have Rita Williams. I think Maria Jimenez is taking her day off, but she'll be back with us as well. So, BJ, what is the word on the street about transplantations?
Hi, everyone. Our word on the street today is a flashback. As you said, our guest today has been with us before. And so we're going to take a little peek back at what happened when she was on our program the first time, and there's a lot of changes that's occurred.
I want to share with our audience, you got a transplant. So how are things? You'll be able to tell us the difference between before and after. How is it now? How are things now?
It's amazing. My wife is telling me to go to sleep now. She's like, you need to just go to bed. Like, what are you working on now? Just go to bed. I'm like, I'm in the middle of writing an article. She's like, go to bed. So yeah, it's made all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
And
you're driven. You really are a driven individual. You
know? My job every day is to protect this kidney.
Passed, but I did the sleeve because I have a hard time healing. Since I've been diabetic 20 years, I have a hard time healing. I get easy infections. And I thought the minimal amount of work, you know, just to get there. And since I didn't have, 200 pounds to lose to get the rest of the weight off, yeah, I went with the sleeve. And the sleeve basically just makes your stomach smaller. And so I got the rest of the weight off and I'm down to 227 as of yesterday. So under the weight that they need. So we're just kind of waiting. And I've got, none of my family was a match or didn't qualify. Most of them didn't qualify to be able to give me a kidney. So I had to wait for a perfect stranger. And so I have 3 strangers that have signed up and just kind of waiting and seeing how that goes. I'm hoping for some news maybe soon.
Okay. Well, and by the way, Melissa, you look absolutely fabulous. You look great. So I don't know what that kidney did for you, but you are fantastic.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So you were here with us in season 5 and you've had your transplant and you've had some good days and some bad days. You've had some challenges. Okay. So tell us about it.
Well, I wanted to preface this before I even get started, because I don't want to scare anybody into getting a transplant, is that every person is unique and every experience is unique. But I wanted to share my experience from dialysis to getting on the transplant list and then actually getting transplants, in case it helps somebody, get prepared for some of the things that can happen. I've had some complications. I think like everybody, that when you find the donor and it's a live donor and you can schedule everything, it sounds like it'll be easy peasy.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. It was still a year-long process. Yeah, I found three people that wanted to donate a kidney, and they start with one. And they do 6 months worth of testing to get them qualified. I had already done 6 months worth of testing to get on the list. And then it takes another 3 months before you can get scheduled. And that schedule moved 4 different times before we actually got a date. So trying to schedule, she had family that was going to come in from out of the country to care for her. They couldn't keep up with the schedule changes. So she had to just find friends to come over and help care for her. She lived alone. And so she had dogs and pets and wanted someone to make sure everything went well. And then, my parents were wanting to come down from Ohio and it was like, no, don't come. Okay, come. No, don't come. Okay, come. Don't come. And they're trying to schedule their doctor's appointments. They had to cancel and move and cancel and move. And so it was hard. And then you always think, well, once this is done, 4 days in the hospital,
okay,
everything's going to be great. Ha! I've had several complications and it was 17 days in the hospital. So, not everything goes as smoothly as it does on TV.
Yeah.
But you manage. I mean, you have good days and bad, of course.
So let me kind of go back to the family. Okay. Because I know that a lot of families, a lot of patients have family members that are potential donors. The problem is that, there may be some taboo as if I give you my kidney. I won't have, you know, if anything happens to me, then I won't have an extra kidney. Or
they, good news for that.
Yeah. Okay. Did you run into any of those situations to where you felt like your family was very supportive?
My family was supportive. They all tried. Didn't want them to give up a kidney because I felt the way you're saying. Yes. I couldn't believe someone would actually give up a kidney knowing that they might need it later. I had trouble asking.
Okay. So it's just the opposite way around. You wanted to make sure that they were cared for.
What I found out a year and a half into deciding, okay, I might go ahead and do this, I have the courage to actually ask people, was that whoever donates a kidney to you, if they ever need a kidney later in their life, they go to the top of the list immediately. Sometimes they never even have to have dialysis.
Well, that's good to know. I did not know that.
Yeah.
I did not know that. So Melissa, since you've had this kidney now, has everything from a financial, socioeconomic level, has everything just been hunky-dory for you?
No.
Tell me about some of your challenges.
Well, first of all, right at the beginning of, at the end of the year before they said I, you know, started getting on the transplant list, my husband's job was getting a little rocky. And I thought, well, in, you know, October, November, the year before I got the transplant, I should probably sign up for like Medicare Part D medical for like prescriptions, because if he loses his job, I know the prescriptions that I'm going to be on, the immunosuppressants and the CellCept and all these things were going to cost a literal fortune, and it's not covered under Medicare. Mm-hmm. So I signed up for Part D so that I wouldn't have a big bill if he lost his job. Okay, don't do that, because what happened was I had my transplant and it slid in between Medicare and his insurance. And so since it slid in there and I had all these deductibles and they didn't cover certain things, I actually paid about $2,500 out of pocket for the first 3 months of medication that I would not have had I just not gotten it at all, because I thought I was preparing. What I found out later was, if he lost his job, say in July, you don't have to sign up in January to have it all year. You sign up when the status changes that qualifies you to sign up for prescription Medicare, and then you add it. So you would have added it in July and then covered, but you still have 3 months where certain medications weren't covered at all. And I just happened to have all those hit right during my transplant.
But Rita, let me ask Rita something. Rita, I thought that those anti-rejection drugs were covered for approximately a year. Is that not what goes on? What happens there? Because Melissa's telling me something totally different.
I think they are covered, but like Melissa said, she switched something in her insurance, and I think she fell between the cracks. That's what it was.
Yeah, it slid in between Medicare and my husband's insurance.
Yeah.
And there was some kind of, because Medicare covered all these drugs until the transplant, then there's certain drugs that would have fallen to the prescription plan. But at that point, I was still in deductible mode.
Right.
And so then I had a whole new deductible that I had to then cover. And then it never went to my husband's insurance to pick up whatever they didn't cover.
Right.
So I had to cover the middle and the end of it. There were some drugs that they told me were going to cost $800 a month and nobody was going to cover it but you.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
that was fun.
Falling between the cracks. That's
what you've transitioned. But you've transitioned from dialysis. Let's talk about pill burden. Okay. how
I have to have a chart to keep track of my pills.
Oh my gosh, so many of them.
And I brought this with me too. This is my pill box. Oops, there we go.
Wow. Are you saying every day?
Every day.
How many pills do you take?
I think I'm at like 45. Yeah. So this 8 boxes per day.
And all of those are anti-rejection medication?
No. So we have steroids.
Okay.
We have 2 different types of anti-rejection medicines. We've got tacrolimus and CellCept.
Okay.
We have, because the kidney doesn't work right at first, sometimes it flushes everything. I have to take magnesium. I have to take phosphorus. I have to take, you have to take an antibacterial. You have to take an antiviral. You have to take, so right now I'm on Lasix because the kidney isn't getting rid of enough fluid. I wasn't taking blood pressure medicine. I was actually taking blood pressure up medicine. Now I'm taking blood pressure down medicine because the kidney's still not doing that right. So I'm on blood pressure medicine twice a day. I'm on sucralfate and pantoprazole, which is, helps with GERD and acid because I had that sleeve and the pills are wrecking my stomach. You know, so I have to take those. And then I have to take vitamin. I have to take biotin because my hair is falling out, an amino acid complex, iron. And some of these are multiple pills a day, like the tacrolimus. I was at 7 pills a day. Now I'm down to 4. It changes every week. They do blood work every week. And then my pills change. So I have to keep track of not only when to take the pills, but how many I take per box. And then for my doctor, I have to make this spreadsheet to keep track of what I'm taking, the dose I'm taking, so that when I go to my pharmacy and get medications filled, they can, you know, see what all I'm taking because some of the stuff is over the counter, and keep track of inventory so that if you've got 30 pills left of one type of medication, that might be 2 days. So I got to go through and count. And I've got a little cheat sheet on this form that says, you know, I take 4 a day. So that's 28 a week. So, you know, I can take an inventory, divide that by how many I'm taking a week and know how many weeks I've got left.
So are you able to swallow? I mean, you know, for me, I'm not just taking a regular vitamin is difficult for me because of the size of the pills. Are you having any problems with getting this down, swallowing and, you know?
No, I'm pretty good as far as pill taking. I hate to take pills, you know, so I'm that was an adjustment for me because I don't normally take them. And so knowing that if I don't take them, I will reject my kidney is a motivator to take your pill. Yeah. But yeah, there was a period in which, you know, I was throwing up every day. You take the pills and you throw it up and you don't know how much you absorbed. You know, sometimes the whole pill would come up and I could kind of guess. But, you know, if it was 30 minutes, was it half the pill? Was it, you know, dissolving? Was it absorbed? And, you know, and so it was scary for a while because I couldn't keep pills down. Yeah. And that was several weeks.
Well, BJ?
Well, Melissa, you are a hero. And I am absolutely inspired by your courage. And I think what you do for so many people who are on different journeys, you let them know that it's not easy, but with commitment, it can be done. So thank you for sharing that. But because it has been such an amazing journey, my question to you is, what has been the most memorable moments of your journey from when we talked to you the first time to now?
Well, the biggest one, I think, was finding out that I had a person that was willing to donate a kidney, but not just that. She was the first one tested and she was a match. I mean, just like that. It was like, what?
Miracle.
I mean, how does that even happen? Because you hear about people testing and it's not that, you know, test again and it's not them, and you test again and it's not them. But I didn't have that. I went straight to, okay, you're a match. And it was such a moment because the person that signed up to give me a kidney was somebody that I didn't even know that well. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I've known her for years, but at arm's length, you know, so, you know, I've known her through another person. It's just, she's one of those people that she knew me well enough that knew, you know, the kind of person I am, and she didn't want to see me suffering anymore. So I think that,
you know, with all of the bad things that are going on in the world, it's nice to know that we still have angels out there and people that really care. You hear so much about the negative, but this is really great. And that someone was able to give you the gift of life.
And you don't know who that person's going to be.
Yeah.
You know, so you treat everybody kindly because you never know when that person is going to be the one that's going to save your life.
Yes.
Literally save your life. Not that I wasn't doing well on dialysis, but, you know, it has a toll on your health. You know, the PTH and parathyroid being high and doing damage to your bones and calcifying your heart and your arteries. You know, even if you're perfect on dialysis, you're still going downhill, you know? And so, yeah, she literally, you know, saved my life. But You know, the other thing was I was able to travel on dialysis, but it was very restrictive. You know, I had to call ahead. You guys had to schedule my dialysis in different places that I went. That was fun when I had to go, but I wanted to go to the Caymans, and we went, and that actually was kind of interesting, but scary as heck, because, you know, so many tests that I had to do to get there to be able to do their dialysis.
Unfamiliar territory. You weren't familiar with it. Yeah.
Yeah. And clinics and nurses you don't know, and what kind of skill level do they have? And, you know, because you don't know. And I think the other memorable thing that I have, and I have to give you guys kudos for that, is, you know, having the same nurse for 6 years, he felt like family.
Well, that's what's so good about home dialysis, that you develop that bonding. Rita?
Yeah. Melissa, thank you for sharing your adventure with us. I know it's been ups and downs. So let me ask you this. So what is one thing you wish you had known before getting a transplant?
That, you know, kind of going over that it's not a quick thing. It's not a quick fix. It's a moving schedule. But the biggest thing I wish I would have known beforehand, so that I could have isolated myself a little bit from it, was the steroids that they use in the hospital for the anti-rejection days when you're in there before you go home. Okay. You know, most of the time, if you're on steroids, it's what, 5 milligrams, 10 milligrams, and you dose down.
Small dose,
I was on 1,000.
Wow.
And that's like having a whole nother adrenal gland.
Like prednisone, is that you're talking about the drug prednisone, right?
In my jugular vein.
Oh, wow.
Dosed in my jugular vein. And I couldn't sleep. I wouldn't shut up. I talked to anybody who would come in my room 24/7. Even the poor guy that delivered food and picked up the trays, he would come in. He's like, I heard you down the hallway. I heard the story you were telling about, you know, that program you wrote. And I want to get into programming. Can you talk to me about that a little bit? And I just went off and off and off and off and off. And I think I made him late. But yeah, I mean, it's a little crazy. And then my family had come down, so they were taking shifts. So there was someone during the day, there was someone at night, and someone during the day, and someone at night. And I wasn't getting any sleep, and I had no privacy. And at one point, I literally lost it. There is such a thing as roid rage.
Okay.
And I kicked everybody out. I told them, get the F out. I was hot. Like, I couldn't stop it. Okay.
Yeah.
Had I known that, I might have been like, you know, you guys can come 3 days a week and visit.
Yeah.
And no, I lost it. My mom was afraid of me.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, it was just too much too soon, right?
I was on medication just to sleep, and I would only get 3 to 4 hours, even on prescription medication, sleeping aids.
Well, like, it was probably such a shock to your body with that, you not being used to all this medication in your body before.
Adrenaline, the steroids, it was way too much.
Right.
But they had to do it because they were trying to get my kidney to start.
Right.
But by the time I left the hospital, I think I was at 200 a day. And then by the time, you know, the first week is up, I think I was down to 30. I'm still on steroids, but it's 10 milligrams a day.
Oh, well, that's livable.
Melissa, to the best of your knowledge, then, is that something that most people that are going through are going to have to be on some form of?
Usually, I think about 3 days worth, but they couldn't get it going. So we're talking 17 days of, you know, massive steroid treatment. Yeah.
So how long did it take you to get back to your normal self?
I'm still not there.
Okay.
I just had a drain line removed from my abdomen 2 days ago.
What happened?
So the surgery, usually what happens is they put a drain line in when they operate, and they put the kidney in, and the surgeons take it out after so many days. Well, the surgeon I had doesn't believe in putting drain lines in, and he has really good success with not putting one in, but I still developed what they call a seroma. And that's a pocket of fluid in my abdomen, and it was growing, and it was putting pressure on my kidney. My kidney function was getting worse instead of better. Creatinine was getting worse instead of better. It was getting kind of scary. So they wanted to put a drain line in. It was in for almost 20 days. And, you know, I had to sleep on an awkward side and, you know, keep draining this thing and flushing it and every day, and just wait for it to get under a certain amount. And that, so, you know, we're doing this interview a little late because of that, but that's, again, you know, you have to go with the flow.
Yeah.
With the flow. And just kind of deal with things as they come, because you can't plan right now. So I'm waiting for the day where it's like, okay, nothing's happening.
Yeah.
My numbers are good. Yeah. I don't have drain lines. I don't have to go to the hospital weekly for blood work. They just switched it to 2 weeks as of right now.
So let's go back to that. Yeah. So after you got the transplant, how often do you have to go back to the hospital to see the transplant team post-transplant?
For a while, it was twice a week because my kidney was bad. It wasn't really up to speed. It went to one in clinic and one televisit twice a week. Mm-hmm. And then it went to blood work once a week. And then they went to once every 2 weeks. And then I started developing infections. Mm-hmm. So I had to go back to once a week. And they just put me back on every 2 weeks as of yesterday. So
progress.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. It comes and goes. It gets better for a while and then something happens. And it goes back downhill and we can't figure out what's going on.
So Melissa, what's happening with your husband? You haven't said anything about your husband. How's all of this affected your relationship?
I think because my sleep pattern's still a little messed up, but you know, we've been doing pretty good. I mean, he's working from home, so we're around each other a lot already. But yeah, I decided to sleep in separate rooms just because it's easier not being able to sleep and try not to keep him up. I seem to be up nights and he's up during the day. We like shoots in the night. But, you know, since the steroids, it's been a little off and I'm working on getting it better. And I think last night was the first night I slept normal hours.
Good.
Yeah. So it's getting there. It's just for me, it's been really slow.
Okay.
Let me piggyback on that about family, because you've kind of mentioned how you've gotten a lot of support from your family. And I had one family member who actually did have a kidney transplant. But as I kind of reflected back, I was happy for her when I heard that she was getting a transplant, but we never talked about it. And because she didn't complain, I never asked her any questions about it. So part of me feels that maybe I could have been more supportive of her. My question to you, Melissa, is what can family and friends do? What can the general public do, like employers or people that would be supportive for people who are going through transplants?
I think there are some things that they can do. For example, nobody seems to understand that post-transplant, I'm on immunocompromised state, immunosuppressants, and I'm not allowed to have salad out to eat anymore. So I couldn't go to Super Salad or, well, whatever's still open now. I couldn't go there and have a salad. I can't even go to Subway and have a Subway sandwich with lettuce and tomato.
Yeah.
Because
for fear of getting an infection, you know,
so even at home, if I have a salad, it's got to be washed, vinegar wash. Mm-hmm. And I have a salad spinner and all that kind of thing. And there are certain foods that I need to still stay away from, obviously. And then there's foods that I really shouldn't have. You know, you don't want to cause your new kidney to fail. So you still try to stay away from salt and stuff like that. And so the hard part for me is, when family comes over and they want to get a pizza, you know, and burgers, and, you know, they come home and you don't eat it. You just kind of go back to your room because I'm tempted, but you know, it's not good for me. It's not good for me. And that makes it hard. It's like being alcoholic and have them come over with beer. You know, you can't do that to people. And if they say, I really can't go out with you because I got to stay away from salt. And then you put salt on their food by giving them a burger or pizza or whatever, you're killing them. And so I don't think people understand that, you know, we struggle to eat right. We struggle even during dialysis. You struggle to eat right.
Right.
And having somebody not understand that doesn't help anything.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is true, because there is this assumption that once you get the new kidney, everything's fine.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that part.
Yeah. Melissa, I have another question. So you sound so positive and everything. So how can you keep, I know it could be a mask, what do we know? How can you keep a positive attitude when recovery is not going like it's supposed to? You touched on it.
Yeah, that's not easy. And, you know, I tell you, you've got to seek out people that lift you up and stay away from the people that don't, that, you know, I hate to use the word toxic, but, you know, there's people that bring you down just by talking about all the things going on in their life that make you depressed as well. And so you hate to isolate yourself, but I isolate myself a lot because I can't handle their problems and mine right now. And find the things that make you happy. For me, you know, music helps me a lot. You know, you find that song where even if you're in a bad mood, you want to get up and dance, you know, move you know, it's a little bopping song, you know, and, you know, Nurse Mark and I, that we shared music all the time. So I've sent him, you know, texts of different music that I think is pretty neat. And the other thing is, you know, reach out. And as Rita knows, sometimes it's the weirdest places. You're watching a YouTube video and it relates to something that hits you and you post a comment that makes somebody reach out and call you. You know, that helped, you know, just being able to have somebody call and notice made me feel like somebody cared.
I'm going to get a little personal. Now, did you have any residual kidney function before you got the transplant? Were you able to urinate at all?
Tiny bit, yep.
Tiny bit. Now, girl, when you sit on the toilet now and you go, shh, I mean, how does that feel with the pee coming out? You know, how does that?
Back that up just a little bit, okay? Before the transplant, I think I produced maybe 200 mils a day.
Ooh, nothing.
Mm. Yeah. Little trickle. Little
trickle.
And they're pretty sure my old kidneys don't do anything now. They're starting to atrophy now. Usually that happens within 1 to 2 years of going on dialysis. So mine were around for a good 5.5 years before they shrunk up. So what happened in the hospital though, was all of a sudden I get this kidney and the kidney starts working. Your bladder is tiny. It's shrunken. And suddenly it's full. I couldn't go a half an hour.
Really?
I had to pee every half an hour. Now, it wasn't much. I was still only producing 200, 300, 400 a day. But it was like, it doesn't fit. That was hard for a while. And when I finally got home, you know, almost a month after the transplant, my family would be like, well, do you want to ride with us to go get the groceries, you know, that we're picking up? And I'd get to the grocery store and it's like, I need the bathroom. I'm not even supposed to be out. And, you know, I've got my mask and my shield and gloves and there's COVID out there and I'm immunosuppressed, compromised system. And I was freaking out. Now I'm going to use a public bathroom. I can't hold it a half an hour. So, but I'm still not at the point where it's like, oh my God, it's a little slow. Now, when I take Lasix, sometimes I'll get one that's close to that, but not quite there yet. But it's really good because I also know that I can drink fluids where before, you know, it's like little tiny Dixie cup 2-3 times a day with my pills and that was it. You know, you had to cut it off. And now it's like, you know, if I want a whole glass with ice in it, you know, it's like I can sit down and watch TV and have a drink, you know, not a drink, but, you know, like water, Kool-Aid, you know, any, I've been drinking these Karmas, which are probiotic water.
Okay.
And, you know, I couldn't do that back when I was on dialysis and had the old kidneys. So that's been nice.
Right. So this is a lifestyle change with this new kidney.
Yeah.
You've got to be able to take care of it is what you're telling me.
Yeah. Okay. It's a third lifestyle now.
Yeah. Third lifestyle. I like that. I like that. Okay. So this is the hard question. What are your fears? Do you have any fears? Do you have any fear about possibly losing that kidney and going back to diet every day? That must be
every day. I worry that it's going to quit, that it's not because it's never really been 100% yet. So anybody that's out there that knows what your creatinine is supposed to be, my creatinine's still at like 1.5.
Well, that sounds good to me. Me being in the dialysis world and all, 1.5 sounds really good.
That's supposed to be a lot less than that.
I think it's 0.5, Melissa. It's 0.5, I think, to 1.5 or 1.2. So there's a range for the creatinine. So you're well within that range. So I mean, you're doing great.
It was all the way down to 1.2.
Okay.
And now it's going back up. And then my GFR. it was all the way up to 56, which was great. And now we're back down to 40.
Yeah, but still, you're still doing good.
Yeah.
You know, so this really is a gift of life. And
my PCH, what was it, 600s?
Uh-huh.
I think it's in the hundreds now.
Wow.
That's good. So my bone density is not going crazy, you know, and getting holes in it from the PCH level.
Yeah. So it sounds like to me you're getting back on track, and it sounds like you're getting as normal as you can be.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's her new normal.
The new norm.
It's the go with the flow normal.
I like that.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's a lot of pills. I still have a lot of edema because, you know, the kidney's still not working. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any edema before on dialysis. The last two, 3 years,
uh-huh.
I had skinny little ankles and you could see every bone in my foot. And now it's like, where'd it go? You know, but I don't know. I'm going to try to start walking again. But for a while I had so much abdominal pain and then the drain line and, you know, all these things. Yeah. And then I've had to order compression socks to try to keep, because every time I stand up to do anything, they hang out over my shoes and my ankles too. So that has been hard because you keep thinking you're going to break your ankle. You're going to break a bone in your foot because it looks like it's deformed and that you've broken it. And so it's scary to walk and it feels like you're walking on air balloons, you know, so you can't tell if you're doing it right. And that scares me because I also have neuropathy. So that balloons on the bottom of numb and it just feels like I'm going to have to go to the hospital because I broke an ankle and didn't even know it, you know?
Yeah. I've talked to patients, Melissa, that said that they didn't want to get a kidney transplant.
No.
Or they've said that they've had a transplant and it didn't work and they were very disappointed and they didn't want to go through that again, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why I asked you that question, you know, what are your fears, you know?
My least fear is that because of you guys, I don't have a fear of going back on dialysis. I don't want the space in my home gone again. I'm kind of happy having my dining room back.
Yes.
Yay.
I owned it, right? You know, I kept track of my blood work and I tweak it whenever I'd see something go wrong and, you know, we'd work it out. And I had a good nurse for 6 years and, you know, I have no complaints on that part. Scary going to a clinic, but, having the home dialysis was really kind of a safe zone. So I don't have a fear of that part. I have a fear of, you know, losing the kidney function and having all the stuff that you can't avoid, you know, the PTH levels and the phosphorus levels and all the things that you have to control. But, you know, I did a pretty good job. And
you did a real good job.
But you were always, even when you were on dialysis, you were compliant and you were very transparent, which was good for us as your medical providers because we were able to sort out any issues or any problems that you were having, you know?
Yeah. You knew that I would do everything I could to work with whatever you guys needed me to do.
Which is not all the time. It's not always positive for a lot of people. They don't believe that there are certain factors that influence chronic kidney disease. However, behaviors such as noncompliance, poor eating habits, alcoholism, physical inactivity, you know, those are the things that make life worse. So we have to do what we can on an individual basis to kind of help ourselves.
Yeah. Or the people that just totally ignore fluid restrictions, you know, because I mean, all you have to do is think about the fluid around your heart and your heart stretches. And then there's the pressure on your heart and your whole body really. And then that fluid comes off and then it shrinks back down. And you can only stretch a balloon out so many times. All I got to do is think about that. And you can't fix that. Like your heart goes, what do you do? I mean, I know people can get heart transplants, but why? If you could avoid it, why would you do that? You know?
Yeah. And I think even without dialysis, heart disease is the number one killer of women in the United States.
Yeah.
You know?
What do they call it? The silent killer.
Yeah. So we really do need to kind of watch things. Well, any closing remarks from you, BJ?
No, like I said, I'm just absolutely fascinated with you, Melissa. I love that part where you say, you know, it's okay to take care of yourself and to people who are negative and things that are negative and not good for you to remove them from your life. I just want to say, just keep it up. you know, keep up the courage and the inspiration that you have. Hey, it's just nice to be on Team Melissa.
Yeah,
right? Yeah, that's right.
And I want to say thank you, Melissa, for being so transparent. This is going to help so many people because, I mean, I can tell them all that's supposed to happen, but when they hear it from you, this is what really happens. And some of the fears that you said, they're very normal and things don't go as planned. And that's okay. People need to know that it's not going to be like in the book. We are not going to follow it chapter by chapter.
And this is the way. TV show about the kidney disease.
Yes. The truth. And this is what patients need to hear.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing your journey with us and being so transparent.
Okay.
Thank you.
Two questions for me. What advice do you have for patients, for people that are not on dialysis and then have these strange lifestyles that leads up to them having chronic kidney disease? And for those that basically are waiting for transplantation, what is your advice to them? Your final thoughts.
Well, you have to have a support team. I will tell you that, because you're going to need, you know, rides to the hospital when you can't drive. You're going to need to go there quite often. You're going to need someone that will help you with your pillbox burden, because filling up, you know, one of these pillbox for every day of the week with pills that you have to take first thing in the morning, and then just after that one, about an hour later, and then during the day, because you can't take this one with that one, you can't take this one with that one. And then at the end of the day, you've got to take, you know, box 7, and then right before bed, you take box 8. And you have to fill these up, right? And so you keep charts of like what day gets what pills. Some days it's Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Some days it's 7 days a week, and then it changes. And you need to have somebody that's on the ball that understands that if you don't take your pills right, you're going to reject my kidney. And I had to fire my husband from filling my pill box.
Oh, really? He wasn't doing a good job?
Nope. I started looking in my box and paying attention to the pills I was putting in my little pill cup and, you know, slamming them back. And I was like, why can't I sleep? You know, I'm like jittery. Like, why can't I sleep? Oh, because he was giving me my prednisone twice a day. So we were doubling my prednisone right at the beginning when it was still, you know, really high. So, yeah, you've got to surround yourself with positive people. Positive people that are smart people, people that can drive you. You've got to have a toolbox. You've got to have ways to distract yourself. I started playing a game called Genshin Impact. And I love it. And all the young kids in the hospital, like, I had my laptop and I'm gaming, you know, and they're like, oh my God, you play that? Who's your top character? And I'm like, are you kidding me? So they thought, this grandma is playing Genshin Impact. But it was fun. It was distracting. Right. You have to find things you can do, hobbies. You know, there's so many things that you need in your toolbox. And any wounds that you have, if your transplant day comes and those wounds are not healed, it's off. You have to do that because no one else is going to do it for
right.
you. You know, I know my foot doc, I was seeing her every week trying to make sure my feet stayed perfect because I knew that surgery was coming up. And if I went in and they saw anything like that, you can't have an infection.
Yeah, no infections, right.
That surgery means immunosuppressants. And if there's an infection, it's off. And so many people are waiting for that day. And I didn't want to be the one to ruin it. So yeah, you've got to really pay attention. You have to take care of yourself. You have to.
Gosh. Well, thank you so much, Melissa, for sharing your story, your real life story. You know, even with all of the inconveniences that you're going through right now, getting that kidney transplant is still number one, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, we thank you guys for joining us today on Kicking It with Kidneys, and we look forward to seeing you next time. Have a great day.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening to Kicking It with Kidneys with your host, Cindy Barclay. See you next week.
The views expressed on this podcast are educational and opinion-based. These are not medical doctors.
Be sure to catch us on social media on our website, kickingitwithkidneys.com, also on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.